Welcome to Unfuck Your Brain. I'm your host, Cara Lowenthal, Master Certified Coach and founder of the School of New Feminist Thought. I'm here to help you turn down your anxiety, turn up your confidence, and create a life on your own terms, one that you're truly excited to live. Let's go. All right, my chickens, I'm very excited for this conversation. I know I say that every time, but every time it's true. Every time I'm like, oh my God, so brilliant. Especially when I'm talking to students from my advanced certification in feminist coaching, because it's just always incredible to have people come into this program and bring their own genius, their own lived experience, their own kind of diversity of thought and experience, and then combine it with the work we do there. And it just creates such powerful teaching and coaching. So I'm super excited for you guys to hear this conversation. So I'm going to let them give further introductions themselves, but I'm with two of my students, Tina Koch. I was practicing the pronunciation, and Rochelle Summers.
You sound really well.
Yes. All that Hebrew school paid off with that sound. And so how would you define your niche, Tina, actually? What's the one sentence version?
Oh, I have two separate ones.
Oh, all right. Lay it on us.
So I work in two capacities in my private practice. So one is as a mentor for people in the performing arts. So I help them get their work made, sold, and seen. But I found out that it involves a mix of strategy. That's what they come for. But then I end up doing mostly mindset work. Mm-hmm. And then the second one is as a coach. And I help people understand and unlearn internalized ableism. And mainly, I would say I attract people that are overwhelmed with everything that's going on, all they have to do or think they have to do. And somehow, even though they try so hard to do all the things, they think they're not doing enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're going to get way more into that for sure. And then Rochelle is a advanced certified life and confidence coach. And who do you coach, Rochelle?
Yeah. So I basically coach who I was about 5 years ago. So I coach working moms who are close to burnout. And often what happens is we don't know what's happening. We've been having this superwoman syndrome for all our lives. And then we have kids and we're still trying to do it all. And we're working full-time and trying to be the mom that we're supposed to be, quote unquote, and we burn out, or we're quite close to burnout, and literally we don't know what's happening. And that's what happened to me. So I help my ladies create simple self-care routines. I'm apart from just being a life coach, I'm also a feng shui consultant. So using the environment as well and senses as well. I use a lot of essential oils to help regulate the nervous system as well.
Great. So I actually would love to hear from both of you before we get into the substance of what we're talking about, kind of your own stories that led you to coaching and to this kind of niche. So Tina, do you want to share with us? And then Rochelle can also fill us in.
Yeah. So I have a history in the performing arts. So I am a professional aerialist, which means I'm a professional trapeze artist. And I was touring the world with shows, had a very successful company. And then I had an accident that totally stopped me in my tracks. And what led me into coaching was that I discovered your podcast, actually, Cara, on my hospital bed. And I was binge listening to it through sleepless nights and got totally hooked to thought work. And as soon as I could move my first finger, I signed up to the clutch and haven't looked back since. And then a year later, I trained the Life Coach School, where you also trained. And now I'm an advanced certification in feminist coaching. And really what I'm so passionate about this work is that I've noticed that, especially in the performing arts, I guess, wider, is the sort of what I had is it was like laudable to do all-nighters, to work all night and never have a break. I literally was directing shows, going to the next one, checking on a show on tour. And then when I had my son, I literally gave birth and went straight into rehearsal to direct the show. And I would say that led in the end to me having an accident because I was just completely exhausted.
Mm. That's such a powerful story. I actually feel like I can't remember if I coached you or you wrote me an email, but I remember reading about your story before I like met you in person or hearing about your story before you came into ACFC and just thinking like, what an example of like, how thought work can lead people and help them when they find it in a really, you know, challenging time.
You coached me. I came to
I did coach you
college.
Yes, yes, that's right.
And you coached me I on my you. Impossible goal because I wanted to.
That's right. I knew. It was, that's right.
And it was really interesting. And you were telling me that. And I still hadn't at that point kind of put two and two together because I literally sort of forced myself back into walking out of a wheelchair. And you were like, right. So if you can force yourself or hate yourself out of the wheelchair, what about... What can you achieve if you try to
maybe like yourself? This is, I mean, if we ever made a broken record of me, it would be, okay, you've accomplished all this by hating yourself. Now, what if we tried liking ourselves? And of course, all my students think then I wouldn't do anything and I would lie on the floor. And of course, that's not true. Like, as you've experienced, it's actually, you still walk and it's nicer when you're not hating yourself. Right. What about you, Rochelle? I mean, you told us a little bit that sort of, I think we all coach people who are us 5 to 10 years ago, yeah. But tell us your story a little bit.
Exactly. So I was working corporate world in UK. I'm based in the UK. And I got to a point where my kids were started school and I was at my desk. I'll never forget. I was at my desk and my manager came over to speak to me and she just said, good morning. And I burst into tears. Like, on good morning. And I couldn't stop. Like once the floodgates opened, I couldn't stop. It was just on the train to work, on back from work, wherever I was in the bath, I was just crying and I didn't know what was happening. And I was getting psoriasis and eczema all over my body. And I literally had no idea. And I was told I was close to a nervous breakdown, just literally burnt out. And I was seeing therapists after therapists, amazing women. But what we were doing was we were drudging up the past and I was telling my story again and again and again. And I was just like, this is great, but I can't tell this story anymore. Like I'm done with the story. I really want some tools to move forward. And I fell into Brooke's funnel of CCP. I'd never heard of life coaching before, literally never, didn't know what it was. And I just saw this woman on the screen saying, do you even know what flower you like? Do you even know what you want to do tomorrow? Like, what do you want to eat for dinner? And I was like, no, I don't. I've lost myself. I don't even know what flower I like. What is it? So I fell into that funnel and I signed up for CCP, which is coach training with the Life Coach School. And I didn't know what it was, what I was getting into, but I just knew I had to do it. I knew that these were the tools to get me out. And I've never looked back from there. And then obviously joining
the program. That's such a like, it's just, I think we've all been in that place where we feel so burnt out that we will like cry at any opportunity. I mean, that is one of the kind of things I say about like how you know you're burnt out is that you like stub your toe and you're like, that's it. I'm just going to lay down and die. Like my emotional resilience right now is so low.
Yeah.
And my nervous system is like so agitated that the smallest thing will just like completely sets you off. Right. And you have this like disproportionate emotional reaction to whatever's going on. And it's so challenging because on some level, like when something dramatic happens, it's easier to believe ourselves about all of our drama. But like, when you're, you know, sobbing because you stub your toe, you're like, this is crazy. I know that this isn't like proportional, but I don't know what's wrong with me. There must just be something wrong with me. Like I can't cope with daily life because you don't realize how burnt out you are, right? Meaning like, we're going to talk a lot about this and I'm doing the burnout breakthrough in a couple of weeks, which I'll talk more about in a minute. But it's like, this is the problem with burnout is people, we use that term all the time and people are constantly like talking about it, but I don't feel like anybody actually knows what it means kind of, or like how to know when you're burnt out or like what to do about it. But I think like one of the signs, if you are trying to figure out if you are burnt out, it is that like emotional gas tank is so low that you just have like no resilience or ability to cope left. Like you are just one tiny thing away from a nervous breakdown at all times. Right. And like, it doesn't really ever get refilled. It's like, one in the tank and maybe you go to sleep and you get to point two, but then like one thing goes wrong and now you're at negative again. And it's like, you can't ever get past that feeling that you're just like on the edge of losing your shit all the time.
Right. And as like I said, therapy really helped, but, and I see so many of my friends going through it as well. And they just think they need to give up work or they just think they need to be there. You know, we know that there's other ways of doing it.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you keep your thoughts, you can stop going to the office, but you're still going to have your thoughts. I'm curious what you or Tina think. Are there other kind of sort of before we get into the why, like signs or symptoms of burnout, like how people can kind of like, what does it really kind of mean burnout to you guys? And how do you know if that's what you're experiencing?
I think I said it actually in the beginning when I was talking about the people I tend to attract. I think it's a definition of Emilia Nagoski, you know, that wrote that book, Burnout, How to Complete the Stress Cycle. I don't know exactly, I'll probably say it wrong. They describe it as just looking, if you look at your life and you just see a mountain of stuff that you have to do and you have to cope and you just feel completely overwhelmed. And the second part of that is that you just try and outdo that. So you're finding yourself in a situation where you are completely overwhelmed, but you're doing all the things and still whatever you do is not enough and you can't get on top of it. And then from personal experience, I have a very good friend with burnout, and it was what you said, Cara. It's like he woke up one morning, and that was what you said, Rochelle, is that he just couldn't stop crying. And I think ultimately, though, you can change your circumstances, but the work you have to do is in your mind and how you see things. I think it starts when you say, how do you notice? I think it starts very little with, I haven't had a very productive day. I could be further along. I should be doing more. I'm not really pulling my weight. I have to get this done. And then freaking out about that. And I think there's also a sense of depersonalization sometimes, that you can't care anymore about certain things.
We've all seen the social media posts about hot girl summer, and I'm here to declare instead that I want happy feminist summer. I want all the listeners of this podcast to be happier this summer, even when the world feels like a dumpster fire. It is still important for us to develop the ability to take pleasure in our own lives, to experience joy, relaxation, and rest, not least so that we have more resources to offer back to the world. That has been the story of my life, and that is what I want for all of you. So I am teaching a brand new challenge called the Happy Feminist Challenge this June, from June 17th to June 21st. I am going to be teaching you how to create more daily happiness in your body, how to create that emotion of happiness, and how to connect to your big picture purpose, the life that you want to live, the kind of happiness that really means contentment and fulfillment and satisfaction with your life. These are both things that society tells women that they don't need and shouldn't bother with, and it's selfish to even think about. And you know how I roll. Fuck that noise. This is the Happy Feminist Summer, and you're not going to want to miss it. You can join the challenge by going to unfuckyourbrain.com/happy or text your email to +1-347-997-1784. That's +1-347-997-1784. And the code word is happy. You are not going to want to miss this. Let's get happier together. I think that's such a good point, because there's really a spectrum, right? And so when I think about burnout, and when I've been thinking about creating this burnout breakthrough, like, some people are already listening to this. They're like, yes, I'm at the I can't stop crying all the time point. Like, I'm already there. I'm already completely overwhelmed. I already can't cope with my life. Well, so I'm on the spectrum. And then there's people at the beginning of the spectrum, right? And I think, you know, what you're saying is so important. That's like, you want to start paying attention to it before you get to the point. If you're already at the point where you're crying all the time, that's totally fine. This will still help. Like, this episode will help. The burnout breakthrough we're doing will help. These amazing coaches can help you. But it's good to get on top of it if you can before you get to that point, right? Like, not wait until that point, and noticing those little bits of like, am I already having the thoughts that are going to, like, if left untreated sort of, and they compound, are going to lead me to burnout? I think the other thing that I find, if I'm starting to feel a little burnt out, is certainly that overwhelm, but also this sort of like, it's not as strong as hopelessness, because I think that's more when you're getting into like depression and you know, maybe need more formal like therapy support, but it is the sort of like, I don't feel like I'll ever get a break kind of, or like, it's sort of this sort of feeling of like, even when I get a break, I don't really feel rested, you know? So it's like the weekend doesn't feel like enough, or even you take a vacation and that doesn't feel like enough. Or it just feels like when you look forward, you're sort of just like, oh God, I don't know when I'm going to not feel like this. Like, it just feels like these problems are never ending. I think that kind of like, it's not like hopelessness, but it's just kind of like low level sort of like, I don't see an end in sight. And I don't like foresee a time when I feel resilient and excited again, right? It's like that kind of, it can be this like low level emotional state that also is important to watch out for. It's like the times that I start to feel a little burnt out, I notice that when I do take a break, it's like not helping, right? Mm. Like I believe a lot, obviously, in like you work and you rest and you play. And like when the rest and the play don't seem to refill the tank, like that's when you know that you may be having a problem, even if you're not yet at the weeping on the train all the time.
Right. And often when you go on holiday, you get ill. Mm-hmm. Like you'll go on vacation. Sorry if holiday doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I was actually away. Thinking, I love that. I actually want to say go on holiday all the time. I feel like that sounds so much more fun than going on a vacation.
Yeah. So you go away, and this used to happen to me and my husband. We'd go away somewhere luxurious and beautiful, and you'd just be like, get the flu and just feel dreadful because your body was like, oh, I can actually stop for a moment and I feel exhausted. Mm-hmm. And the other symptom I found was lack of sleep. I was waking up at like 3 a.m. every night and having a whole, like Tina said, a whole to-do list of things going through my brain of, I should be doing this. I need to be doing this. Don't forget that. What about this? And again, I remember my male boss saying to me, well, I have just as much to do as you do. And I don't wake up at 3 a.m. every night. That's not right. And I was thinking, oh gosh, is this not a thing? I thought everybody woke up at 3 a.m. So that was
such a good point, though, right? That like we think going on vacation should be restful because we're not doing the work. But if your brain is constantly thinking about it, it doesn't really matter what your like hands are doing, like whether you're typing on the computer or not. If your brain is just still in that, you don't know how to turn it off or redirect it, you're going to have that problem. So let's talk a little bit about kind of what creates this, right? Because I know that both of you kind of work quite a bit on how. And we obviously talk in ACFC all the time about like how women are socialized and what the social expectations and the messaging they get are that create this. And of course, not only women get burnt out, but we are really focused right on people socialized as women. So I'd love to hear kind of both of your takes on what creates that, what kind of socialization goes into that.
So the common thread that I see in clients is this underlying belief that we're only good enough when we're producing. And I would call it, and I think some people are going to jump at this word, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway. I think at the heart of it is internalized capitalism. And what I mean with that is this idea that our self-worth is directly linked to our productivity and how much capital our contributions to society create. So it's almost like you can't feel value in yourself for just being alive and just for being a human being. And you have to be a human doing to have any value. And for women, I think in particular, it's not just in the workplace. It's also like we have to produce children. We have to produce meals and, you know, just going very stereotypical, obviously. And I think generally, I would say, I see so much of a feeling guilty when you rest undervaluing achievements and prioritizing work and all the things you have to do in life over your own well-being. It's almost like everybody else first, me last. That plays into that as well for women. And I think it's not just women. I was thinking, I'll just say this one more thing. I think everybody in a capitalistic society is vulnerable to internalizing ideas to connect your value to your work rather than who you are, or your output rather than who you are. But I think it plays out differently depending on your social position. So, you know, like there's gender, but there's also, if you have a privileged background, you might have intense pressure to achieve because that's just what your family expects you to do. But then when you're from a less privileged background, you might be having all these immense economic pressures on you. Or sometimes if you're a woman of color, after speaking to my friend Helen the other day, and she was saying there's so much pressure on her to be twice as good and have twice as much, be twice as productive as a woman of color than her white counterparts.
Yeah, I think it all goes to like, as you were talking, I was thinking about the idea that like, there, I think there, everybody, of course, is subject to this, like, well, if you live in a capitalist society, the capitalist socialization. And I think there's like a kind of Puritan religious socialization that goes on too. That's sort of like work is virtuous, idleness is sinful. Like there's a reason that that and capitalism like merged so intensely, right? Like in America. But I think the reason that it's worse for women and then doubly worse if you have another, you know, for each marginalized identity kind of is like the more that you are taught that like you need to prove that you're worth existing, basically, right? The more intense this is going to be. So women are taught that. Women of color hear that even more, right? Like with every marginalized identity, there's even more socialization around sort of that you can, you know, you need to like justify your existence and why you are like good enough to be here and just be alive. So on top of whatever actual economic pressure you have to produce, right, enough money to stay alive, at least in the US where we don't have a great social safety net, there's also this like internalized, you know, you're constantly trying to prove that you're good enough, that you're worthy, that you deserve anything. And that just gets kind of compounded as you go along.
Yeah. And what you always say in ACFC is that we as women just outsource to other people to determine how valuable we are.
Right.
So obviously, if it's our default setting, that hits harder.
Right. Yeah. And our default setting from socialization. Totally. Mm-hmm. What about you, Rochelle? What do you think?
Yeah. And I think with my clients, what we notice is that before having children, it's almost like you're in hustle mode and you can do it. You know, you can get to do all the things you're supposed to achieve what you're supposed to achieve, you know, get the job, you know, go to the gym, look this way, act this way. And then something happens, obviously, when you have the children and there's just like a whole nother to-do list on top of everything that you're trying to do. And I think that's how I found like almost this collapse happens where it's just like, I can't possibly cope with all of this. And coming from, as you know, Jewish and Asian background, it's like the matriarch is the person who looks after the home. We're feeders. Traditionally, you know, I still cook all the meals from scratch. And it's like, this is how we look after our family. So, you know, we know going back in the day, it was the man worked and the woman was at home doing that. And now I think it's great that we have all these opportunities to do both. And it's exhausting. And where we find the burnout happening, Tina and I were speaking about this yesterday, is that we don't feel like we can just be worthy and just stop and give up some of those things without losing our identity. So I still want to be the career woman. I still want to be independent financially. I still want to feed my children, and look after the family and do the washing and manage the school diary. And it is just something we do. And I'm sure there are lots of men out there that do it as well. But, you know, this is how I've found, and you can almost see even family members where they've had children and, you know, top lawyers going, oh, I'm finding this hard now, you know, so.
Yeah. I mean, if you're like hustling at your top ability and then you add on a whole other thing, right, then you're going to, that's when you like topple over, I think. But I think we've talked on the podcast quite a bit. Now we've done two episodes kind of on like the second shift that so many women or people socialized as women take up, particularly if they're in heterosexual relationships. We had, you know, Shauna, your ACFC colleague, talking on the last podcast about how the studies show that in same-sex relationships, it's usually negotiated more equally because you're not falling back on these default roles that we've all absorbed, right? And so, yeah, there's structural social change we need. And also, even if there was all the structural social change, if your thought process is still like, no, this is what I have to do to be a good worker and be a good mother and be a good wife and be a good person, it, like you'll still be trying to do it all, right? And you will still, of course, end up trying to burn out. You will end up burning out because you're trying to do three things at once all perfectly and putting your self-worth on all of them. So I also want to kind of have you guys share some about, you know, we've talked about sort of internalized capitalism, but then there's this other layer of internalized ableism, right, that we all have and that impacts this. And so I would love for you both to kind of share your thoughts on that and how, you know, what the relationships are between capitalism and ableism and how, well, we should define those terms also probably for everybody listening, just to make sure we all know what we're talking about and how those kind of impact these experiences.
I would say that almost the ideology of ableism is the bedrock of capitalism. Because obviously, if you think that all is based around how much you produce, all is based around how long you can work for, how fast you can work, and what output you can create. And obviously, if you have a disability, you cannot fulfill that expectation. And so ableism, I would say, is almost, well, I don't know if it's can say that, it's almost like a product of capitalism.
Can we hold on? Can we pause? Can you define ableism for everybody listening in case they they probably heard the word, but maybe aren't entirely sure like what that means or what it looks like?
Oh, the pressure of a definition. In a nutshell, the term ableism refers to bias, prejudice, and discrimination against disabled people. Or if you prefer people first language, you would say people with disabilities. The discrimination is based on the belief that there is actually a correct way for bodies and minds to function, and that anyone who deviates from that is inferior and less valuable. In relation to what we're discussing today, the correct way for bodies and minds to function would be to be at its utmost productive. Now, to define ableism properly, we also need to define disability. And that is just because there are different interpretations around about what disability actually is. Broadly speaking, there are two models of disability, the medical model and the social model. I prefer the latter, and I'll explain you. The medical model of disability says people are disabled by their impairments or differences. An impairment would be being blind, experiencing bipolar, having MS, or a, say, learning difficulty. The social model says that people are disabled by barriers in society that exclude them and discriminate against them, and not by their impairment or difference. To be clear, when I say barriers, I do mean physical, like not having accessible toilets, but I also mean barriers caused by people's attitudes to difference, like assuming disabled people can't do certain things. Let me give you an example. Say you're a disabled person who can't use stairs and you want to get to a restaurant. When you get there, they have steps at the entrance. The social model recognizes that this is a problem with the building and not you as a person, and would suggest adding a ramp to the entrance to resolve the issue. The medical model will try to get you walking. Basically, the social model states that disability is caused by the way society is run and organized, so people with impairments or difficulties are disabled by society. So disability is therefore a social construct. Now, this is a bit controversial, but I'm going to say it anyway. You do not have to identify as disabled to experience ableism. Disabled people have expressed that the negative effects of ableism have been socially and psychologically damaging to them in a myriad of ways. What is less known, however, is how ableist attitudes affect a lot of people that may not identify as disabled.
Can we just pause there for a second? Because I think even just thinking about, like, this is such a good opportunity to think about the ways in which whoever is a dominant group in society, like, sets the standard implicitly for what's considered quote unquote normal, right? So we use, like, for people who haven't paused to think a lot about ableism or internalized ableism or structural ableism, like, why do we consider whatever? We have some general sense, it's not even like it's defined anywhere, of what being supposedly quote unquote able-bodied means. But like, where does that even come from, right? How is it communicated to us? We just absorb this through socialization. I guess really what I want to say is it's primarily, especially in a patriarchy, it's not even just based on being quote unquote able-bodied. It's also based on men and what is able-bodied for a man, right? I mean, mm-hmm. We have, like, men have 24-hour hormonal cycles and we have a 24-hour work day or 24-hour day-based culture. So women have, people who have more of a female reproductive system or hormones are on a different hormonal cycle, right? Like, even just what we think about as being able-bodied, quote unquote, it's not even just, it's even more kind of specialized. It's really like, what is some kind of generic supposed standard or norm that even that I think is, right, male influence based on men, based on probably white men, based on patriarchy.
Yeah. And I would say it sort of, You always think it only affects disabled people, but I think it affects everybody because everybody lives on a spectrum. It's not like everybody has the same mental capacity, has the same, you know, mind, has the same body. So I would always define it as a really broad term. And I guess it's almost, yeah, there's a sort of stigma, right? You think about ableism or internalized ableism, that's nothing to do with me. But internalized ableism just means a sort of you having internalized discriminatory ideas about, you know, I was saying this in when I was speaking in the Slack, that do not fit with this sort of muscly power cis male white dude.
Yeah. And I think, and I mean, I love that. I think it's so important to like, it's not a binary, it's a spectrum, right? Like it's a spectrum all along, like whether or not you identify or experience impairments or experience social, you know, disability because of social structures or whatever, everybody is somewhere on the spectrum. And also like everybody experiences natural changes in their body and their ability, right? Over their life, based on just being sick, getting pregnant, being whatever else, like living in an environment that has mold in it when you didn't before or whatever, like your body is going to fluctuate, your kind of physical resources are going to fluctuate, you know, how kind of hostile it feels society's ableist structures are going to impact you more or less depending on where you are in your life. And then over time, as we age, most people experience a change in their physical abilities, like, and that's coming no matter what, right? So all of this impacts all of us, regardless of like where we maybe start supposedly on some kind of spectrum.
Yeah. I would also say it's almost like an organic human experience.
Right.
Unless you die a sudden premature death.
Right. Unless you happen to be like
at some point.
Right. Unless you're like an Olympic snowboarder who happens to die at 21, you will probably experience some change or difference in your physical abilities as your life goes on. Do you have anything you want to add to this part, Rochelle?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that when we were talking about doing this together, I said to Tina, I don't think I have things to say about this. Like, I, you know, who am I to comment? And she said, well, you know, it's even things like I'm allergic to dairy, like death allergic. And even like not wanting, she said to me, even not wanting to speak out at restaurants, that is something I feel that I'm being awkward or a pain, but that is to the other people around me. Oh no, you know, here she is, you know, moaning about things. And I didn't even realize that was an aspect of this. And even thinking also separately on the corporate world, you know, women, when you talk about the menstrual cycle and our emotions do change and, you know, tears, having been in that world, are shunned upon. You know, oh, it's the woman, she's being so emotional, you know, what are you doing? Whereas if a man is to show anger, that's allowed. It's like, well, he's just being, like Tina, you know, the muscular, showing his emotion, being
he's like
powerful.
A strong leader. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So there's also, you know, that emotional side of, I think.
It's not even seen as one of my favorite tweets ever. And by favorite, I mean, like, just horrifyingly accurate. It was basically like the biggest con like men have ever pulled is rebranding anger as not an emotion, that, right? That like when men get angry, that's like somehow not, they're not being emotional. But when women have any emotion, they are being emotional.
Right.
So let's talk a little bit about how we can use thought work. So we've sort of, here's all the problem. We've all internalized sort of what I would call toxic capitalism, right? I mean, as those of you who heard the episode I did with Trudy LeBron, I think it's useful to differentiate between like toxic capitalism and, you know, what she calls just commerce, which is like a more equity-based way of exchanging goods and services for value. And that I think just commerce would not have to be ableistic. It's like ableism in a different word form. It's like would not have to be discriminatory and based on ableism. Let's say that way. Whereas I think, you know, toxic capitalism in its current form, like is, as Tina said, inherently
ableist,
suffused with ableism. That's how we can say it. Because ableistic doesn't sound like the right word.
Ableist.
It's just ableist. That. There we go. Where was I getting the IC from? I was having a lot of trouble with that.
I think I was too far away from my microphone.
Sometimes you get a word wrong and you're just
when
like,
you're looking for it. I was going, ableist.
Oh, I couldn't hear you. Ableist. There we go. Ableist. I don't know where that was coming from. I've said that word before 10 million times. But so you know, it's definitely inherent in that kind of toxic capitalist right obsession with productivity. So given like, yes, we all want to make social change, but also now we live in this world right now, what can we do with our brains? Which is like the theme of this podcast. I'd love to hear from both of you. We can have Rochelle go first this time. Yeah. Tina's worried about always going first. To talk a little bit about like how you think we can use thought work to deal with this, right? To kind of not deny what the structural problems are, but to kind of create more resilience.
But for me, the most basic sense is to first have the awareness. There's so many things going around in our brains that we don't even realize. And I think when we talk to non-coaches, we realize that people just assume this is just the way it is. So I always teach my clients first of all to just get in the habit of getting their thoughts down on paper, because there's so many, you know, niggly little things that you're like, oh, I didn't even realize how much I was pushing myself today or hating on myself or shoulding on myself. And as a British thing as well, we're often keeping a stiff upper lip. We don't want to discuss it with friends. We don't want to be seen to be failing or not being productive. So having what's actually going on in your brain, the self-talk you're having, getting it out on the paper is really, really helpful to get that awareness. And then once you've got the awareness, you taught us, which I teach everybody, is just looking at those thoughts and seeing if there's a way of changing them slightly. So we call it the thought ladder, which you've all probably heard Cara mention before, but it's like looking at those and saying, questioning those thoughts. Oh, is it really that you should be doing something? Or could it be that, oh, is it possible that I don't need to do that today? Is it possible that I could do something else? And just giving yourself the opportunity to be aware and look at, is it true or not? And how could I maybe change that thought to serve me, to be a bit kinder? We're so harsh on ourselves as women. And just having that kindness and having that care for ourselves a little bit, even if it's just 10 minutes a day in the morning, is really going to be helpful.
Yeah, definitely agree. It all has to start with that awareness. What do you think, Tina? How do you use thought work on kind of this internalized ableism productivity stew?
I also start with the awareness piece. I think it's so important to really actually educate yourself of where all this is coming from. So it's not just you thinking all these things. I think this knowledge is a piece. So awareness, under awareness, I put knowledge. And then noticing it. So just wandering around your day and just notice this stuff coming up with compassion, because it can happen that you then kind of go, oh no, it's all like in my brain, and you beat yourself up and you try and reject it and push it all down. That's why I always say notice it with compassion. And the next step I teach is naming it out loud, which is a bit weird. You can do it sort of out loud in your head. And the way it goes is you just narrate your own life a little bit. And I always say like, oh, here comes the bit where my brain regurgitates the thought that, or you can create your own sentence. It's almost like you're narrating, you're noticing, but you're kind of creating a bit of distance in your head. And then the next one is to sit with cognitive dissonance. It's almost like this stuff that you've internalized and then how you actually want to think, like both of these things happening in your brain, just sit with that for a bit. And then what Rochelle already said, kind of use your tools, like do a model, sit with your model, and there'll be an important part to process your feelings before you create an intentional model, and then practicing new thoughts, almost kind of going, okay, now I know where this is all coming from, now what?
So I love that. And I think one of the things that's coming to mind as you're speaking is like, so in some ways it's like thought work often feels very zoomed in. It's like, what is the specific thought in your brain? And then an understanding of structural oppression feels very zoomed out, right? It's like, what is the big picture society system in the world? Mm. But I think one of the places it's really easy to see how they intersect is seeing the programming in your brain as like a program you were taught, the thought your brain learned to believe was true. And then looking at the ways in which your brain will always find evidence to prove that true. So in this mm-hmm. instance, an example would be like, you start out thinking, well, I don't get enough done. That's why I have these thoughts. Like, I'm behind. I'm not getting enough done. I'm not productive enough. I didn't have a productive day, whatever, whatever. We've all heard this a million times in our own head and from everybody around us. And everybody says it like it's a true thing. Like, it's clear that the day truly wasn't productive and that that's bad. If you take a step back and you think, okay, so what happened when I was socializing growing up is that I absorbed all this internalized ableism and capitalism, which means that my brain now runs the program called, you're probably not doing enough. Like, that's the program in my brain. And my brain is like, wakes up every morning, is like, press play on you're probably not doing enough. And if we don't know about thought work and socialization, we're like, yep, that's true. Let me try to take a bunch of actions to try to satisfy that program. Like, if I take enough actions, my brain will not run the program. But in fact, once you learn that it's truly just socialization and a program your brain is running, I think that's when you can start to think about the fact that even when you've had a really productive day, the next day your brain says it again. And sometimes your brain tells you that you don't have enough time to do things when you only have two things to do. And like that you can start to see how what is actually happening in the world does not really impact whether your brain decides to say this or not, right? Because the script is in there, the program is in your brain is going to play that program regardless. So if you feel overwhelmed, you may think, well, if I just took half the things off my plate, then my brain wouldn't play the I'm overwhelmed, right? And if you're think you're not productive enough, you think, if I just double what's on my plate, my brain wouldn't play the I'm not productive enough program. These things are so deeply connected because in a very weird way, I think if you believe you need to constantly be productive, then you are constantly taking actions to make yourself overwhelmed, right? Because you don't believe that there should be any space, basically. You don't believe that there should be any rest or any relaxation. And so it like seems counterintuitive. When you're overwhelmed, what you think is, yeah, of course I want to do less. I'd like to have less things to do. I would feel so great. But subconsciously, you were actually constantly creating more shit for yourself to do. Because if you weren't overwhelmed, then you wouldn't think you were being productive, right? They like go hand in hand. You actually are very afraid to not be busy because then you'd have to think that you aren't productive and not valuable. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that makes sense because I'm just saying it as I talk it out, but it's like two sides of the same coin.
Mm. It's like your worth is based on how overwhelmed you are.
Right. You don't think that, but it's true because your worth is based on how productive you feel. And so you want to always have the chance to like be more productive to prove your worth. So you're going to keep adding shit to your plate so that you can keep trying to make that happen. You're not going to take stuff off your plate, even if you could. You think you would intellectually, but subconsciously your brain is running the program to keep adding shit. Mm. Because if your plate was actually half full, you think you'd feel peaceful and not overwhelmed. But actually your brain is terrified of that because then you would think that you're not worthy and not good enough because you're not doing enough.
Yeah.
So it's like terrible codependency between like being overwhelmed and thinking you have to be productive all the time.
Like busy syndrome. It's
yeah.
Like I'm so busy, which means right. I must be very important.
I think I don't want to be, but I keep making myself busy because my ego is tied up in it. Yeah. What were you going to say, Tina?
I was just going to say, as we're talking to thought work practitioners, that this can seep into your thought work as well, mm-hmm. so that you beat yourself up about not having done your thought work today, mm-hmm. and that you include this into your belief system of being productive, mm-hmm. and it's called thought work, isn't it? The kind of this bettering yourself, and it can happen mm-hmm. also with rest. You know, whenever I see these posts about rest as productive, it's just
but you're like, that's not the point of rest.
Exactly. And also, it's just what I also wanted to say, when you start doing this work, and you maybe stumbled across this right now, if once you start putting on the brakes, you think that, oh no, I'm going to rest and I'm going to get rid of all this productivity thinking, it's actually going to feel really shit because I've gone, when we come back to personal lived experience, when I kind of stopped or was forced to stop, it was actually really horrible.
That's why we don't rest, because we don't want to experience what it's going to feel like.
Yeah.
Exactly. Totally. So good. So those of you listening to this and are like, oh my God, this describes me. I need help with this. I want you to go to unfuckyourbrain.com/breakthrough, teaching the burnout breakthrough starting June 6th. And we are going to solve this problem. You're going to learn exactly what is creating your burnout, and you're going to learn how to heal what's already happened, but most importantly, like stop, get out of the cycle so that you are not continually creating more burnout for yourselves. So unfuckyourbrain.com/breakthrough, or you can text your email to +1-347-997-1784. And the code word is breakthrough. And I would love for you guys to also tell everybody where they can find you if they want to learn more about your work.
So I have no website. I only have an Instagram. There you go. And that's where you'll find
me. How modern of you. No website at all.
And it's tina.marie, .co, @tina.marie.
You want to spell that in case people based on pronunciation aren't exactly sure.
I can't
sure.
spell it in English. I'm German. You're putting me on the spot there. Okay, I'll try. So @tina.marie.coch.
There we go. We'll put it in the show notes also.
Yeah. And mine is no better. I'm just
oh, great.
That
All right.
Out.
Spell yours. Let's go. What's happening? You're going to get in the business mastermind so we can fix this. What's happening, Rochelle?
Yeah, I'm the one who phonetically spells my name on Zoom so that people normally can know how to say it. So mine is, I have a website, rochellesummers.com. So it's rachelesummers.com. And I have an Instagram, which is Rochelle Hannah Summers. And that's it, because somebody stole Rochelle Summers before.
Oh, no. Got to send out a vigilante, get that shit back. All right, y'all. Thanks for coming on and sharing your wisdom and expertise with the chickens and with me.
Thank you for having us.
If you're loving what you're learning on the podcast, you have got to come check out the Feminist Self-Help Society. It's our newly revamped community and classroom where you get individual help to better apply these concepts to your life, along with a library of next level, blow your mind coaching tools and concepts that I just can't fit in a podcast episode. It's also where you can hang out, get coached, and nerd out about all things thought work and feminist mindset with other podcast listeners just like you and me. It's my favorite place on earth, and it will change your life, I guarantee it. Come join us at www.unfuckyourbrain.com/society. I can't wait to see you there. Pop quiz, have you signed up for the Happy Feminist Challenge yet? This is a brand new challenge that I am running mid-June, starts June 17th, where we are going to be learning how to create both of the two kinds of happiness. First, the happiness we get to feel as an emotion in our bodies on a day-to-day basis, which society tells us we shouldn't care about and we are guilty or selfish for even wanting to experience because we're women. And the second form of happiness, the big picture, life satisfaction and fulfillment happiness, which society tells us comes from living up to impossible social standards that we can never meet. Neither of those things are frivolous, silly, or selfish. In fact, learning how to create more happiness, small and big picture in your life, is how you show up with all of your gifts and everything you can offer to the world in such a bigger, stronger way. And it just makes life a lot more fun. So I am going to be teaching you exactly how to do both those things this feminist challenge, this happy feminist challenge. Text your email to +1-347-997-1784. And the code word is happy, or go to unfuckyourbrain.com/happy. I can't wait to get happier with all of you. I'll see you there.